My name's Kate. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey.
I'd like to thank the committee for asking me to speak here. I've managed to put off thinking about it for 2 months, so now I'm pretty nervous. I'll get this out of the way, too. My sobriety date is the 6th of May, 1978. Thankfully, it's easy for me to remember because it's 5, 6, 7, 8. I'm pretty sure I wouldn't remember it otherwise. The other thing that I thought was pretty cool when I got the, I got an email asking me to speak, and I don't know why. Well, I do know why. I got sandbagged for a couple of friends, but, you know, the last time I had a drink was on the 5th of May, 1978, 37 years ago. And the 5th of May is when I got the invite. So I thought that was pretty cool. You know, we're supposed to talk about it's a selfish program, is it? You know, with the big question mark. I don't know. I thought I knew when I saw the topic. I thought, well, I know, yeah, it's a selfish program. I understand that. And the truth is, I looked it up and, the definition of selfish is not something I want to be. It's, you know, like I don't care about you, I only care about me if I'm being selfish. I remember my mother taught me when if I'd go over to your house to play, we'd play what you wanted to play. And if you came to my house to play, we always played what you wanted to play. It pissed me off. I don't really blame her for me not understanding that correctly, but, you know, because this is what I heard. But what I heard was, you're more important than I am. And actually, you know, the selfish part of this program for me, although I do things that I did things where I didn't care about your feelings. I was unfaithful in relationships. I would lie to people. I didn't have husbands and children that I finked out on because I didn't have husbands and children. But I finked out on other people. If you had asked me to speak somewhere like today, I would have probably called in sick. You know, and I figured you'd figure it out. I mean, there's two other people. You know, you don't really need me. And that, you know, that's real selfish. It's not caring about you at all. When I started drinking, you know, I live in Oregon now, but I grew up in the South, and I actually had my first drink and my first drunk all at the same time in about 100 miles from here at Chautauqua State Park in Alabama. And, you know, it was the worst tasting stuff we'd ever had. Somebody had a bottle of vodka, and we had one of those old round coolers that we put concentrated lemonade in, and then we poured the bottle of vodka in it. And then we had a smaller thermos of Coca-Cola. And so we'd take, you know, a little bitty sip of that nasty lemonade vodka stuff, and then we'd drink some of the Coca-Cola's chaser. And by the time the Coke was gone, we didn't really care. We were just chugging it down. And I remember asking somebody, how am I going to know if I'm drunk? Because that was, you know, I was going to get drunk. And they said, well, you'll know. And sure enough, when I couldn't get up off the ground, I figured I was probably drunk. And I always got drunk. I got very sick after that, so you would think that I wouldn't want to do it again, but I did. And every chance I got to drink, I would get drunk. It's rather humbling because there is somebody in here who I've known for a long time. We drank together in Germany, and it's interesting to know somebody that you drank with when you get sober. It's interesting. I got sober at Long Beach Naval Hospital. I didn't intend to get sober. I had been in San Diego, drinking that weekend, and got drunk on Saturday. Sunday was the 6th of May. And so I better pay attention to the time. And I was at the Naval Hospital, and they had a drug and alcohol program there. And I was going to a two-week program. Normally, physicians go to it to learn about alcoholism. Now, I wasn't a physician, but I had the opportunity to go to it. So I went to learn about alcoholism because I had people that were working for me that were drunks. Yeah, I really saw it as a management tool. And so I didn't intend to stop drinking. I was so sick on Sunday, I didn't drink. And then on Monday, when we started the course, you know, I thought it would be rude to drink. So we wound up sitting in AA meetings and group therapy, and we went to education classes. And I found out later they were trying to get me to stay as a patient. I didn't think I needed to stay, but I did think I had a little problem with drinking. So I didn't. I actually never drank again. I eventually went back to treatment there. And you know that it just changed my life. I mean, you know, I don't have to tell you. When I got here, I didn't understand how the program worked. I was telling some people at lunch, I'm a real black and white thinking person, and people kept talking about working the program. And I said, well, where is it? I thought that it was written down someplace, you know, that we just follow it, and that would be it. I'm getting awful dry, sorry. I had to learn how to stay sober, how to share with you, how to not be selfish. When I first got here, you know, everything was really simple. And I think they do that on purpose because we cannot figure out what they're talking about. And they have all these things like easy does it, one day at a time, think, unless you're a newcomer. And one of the things somewhere along the line I heard was that it was a selfish program. And what that meant to me was that I needed to work on myself before I worried about you. Now, I was a big people pleaser, and you were more important than me when I got here, and I had to learn not to do that. I had to figure out that if you're drinking, I can't be around you. If you're real negative, I can't be around you. If you're not working the program, I don't want to be around you. There's no big trick to staying sober 37 years. You go to meetings, you don't drink, and you don't die. You know? And it's hard work, and it's not easy, and I had wonderful people along the way that helped me. And I am so grateful for that. There are people who have stories that I do not know how you ever got sober. I really don't. I could not have lived through that kind of pain. I was a real weenie when it came to pain. And I gave up pretty fast. And I am grateful for that. And I'm grateful for everything that I have had. I've been very fortunate in my life. And, you know, I don't want to give that up. I'm real glad I had it. But I know I didn't deserve it. And I don't deserve a lot of things. I don't deserve this wonderful program on my own. I am grateful this program is here. This is my 7th international convention. It's so exciting! Love it! Well, I went to my first one in Montreal, and is that how much I got left? Okay. I went to my first international convention in Montreal, and I vowed I would go to every one that I could. And I've made it to every one so far. And I intend to keep going. Thank you for being here. I really thought all of you would be out looking for fireworks, you know, especially when the sun came out. I have some friends here. I appreciate them coming to support me. I'm glad you're all here. Thank you for being here and being sober.
Thank you, Kate, for sharing. Let's see here. I can't talk about this, whether it's a selfish program or not, because we have two speakers to go. And one thing that caught my ear last night, and it was great to hear it in a large venue. There are several little snippets in the big book that meant a lot to me and allowed me to continue moving through the steps. And one of them was actually in a foreword, one of the forewords, I don't remember which one, but it talks about, I'm not going to try to quote word for word, so that's my disclaimer, but it talks about the program at its core, it's simple and personal. And had it not been for that, I would have struggled a little more than I did. You know, one example of it being personal, one of my home group members has these little nice little cards made up, and it's a prayer and meditation card. And after one of my first meetings, and after I started working with a sponsor, I was sitting across his kitchen table with a cup of coffee, and once in a while he would ask me, "Have you heard?" Especially when I was brand new, "Have you heard anything or seen anything at a meeting that was kind of odd or you didn't understand?" And I told him, I said, "Yeah, I heard this word two-stepper. What the heck is that?" And he said, "Well, that's when somebody says they're an alcoholic and then they're going to save the world. You go from half of the first step to step 12 and sainthood." So, okay, I understood that. And he also had mentioned at a previous visit that we're going to go through this book, the steps in order. So what does he do next is he hands me this step 11 card. And he says, "I want you to start reading this every day." So I called him on it and I says, "You just told me we're going through this in order. Now you're jumping me. We're still on the preface and you're jumping me to step 11. He says, "Well, maybe by the time you get there, it'll be a habit." Well, one of the ways I personalize that, I smoke. My morning routine, part of it was, of course, turn on the computer, feed the dog, start the coffee, pour the coffee, let the dog out with a cigarette. Not the dog with the cigarette. But we're working on that one. So I started laying this card on top of the cigarettes. And so if I got to move the card and it's now in my hand, why not read it now? The dog can wait a half a minute. So that's one personalization that helped me, is I got to trick myself into doing what I'm asked to do. But if it works, who cares? So our next speaker, I'm going to introduce Dave.
Hi, everybody. My name is Dave. I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic.
Hey, Dave.
My sobriety date is May 18th, 1986. I haven't had to take a drink since. And I don't know how I got here either. Eva Sanchez wrote me a letter back in April, and I probably didn't see it till like the middle of May. Because I'm not one of those guys that look at email every day. I catch mine a month at a time. You know, I don't really think there's anything that important on it. So it just happens that Eva's name came up, and I looked at the questionnaire, and I said, "Who did this to me?" You know, I don't know who did it, but you know, I gratefully filled out the application and I accept it because I was taught, like in Alcoholics Anonymous, we do what we have to do and we move on. You know, and like a lot of other people, you know, I didn't really pay attention to the topic till about last week. And I'm thinking, like, selfishness, who chose that? You know what I mean? Like, why would you choose that? You know, like, early on, when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I heard that, you know, the only thing selfish is that I was able to come in here, bring myself in here, and I was going to learn to recover a day at a time, you know, and if I was lucky, I'd be able to help someone else. But, when I got here, it was like, I was scared, I was frightened, I was full of fear, and like, I had no idea that I was selfish, self-centered to the extreme. Everything was about self. But if you had asked me that, I'll tell you, no, I'm the nicest guy you ever met. I'll help anybody, but deep down inside, it was always a string attached to it. And, you know, like, I live with strings attached to them, even in a marriage. You know, like, I'm grateful that I stumbled into the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I had sense enough to stay. And it was probably my most embarrassment of my life, besides my wedding day, I think. My wedding day was fantastic, but I was drunk. And I had sunglasses on the whole time. And when I stumbled into Alcoholics Anonymous, I went into a group called the West Oak Lane Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I walked into the group, and as I filtered through the smoke, this old guy called out my name. That's embarrassing, because he was there the day I was born. He was my dad's best friend, and like I was the most embarrassing moment of my life. You know, I could have climbed up in self that day, you know, like, because first of all, I was only here for ultimatum, save my job, save my wife, and do whatever else it took to get through life that day. And like when he called out my name and he said, you know what? He said, this is a great opportunity for you, and you're going to break that cycle in your family. And I immediately got a resentment. Now he's talking about everybody in my family, you know, like, I didn't hear him say this was going to be a great opportunity for you to change your life, you know, and like, I looked at him like the nerve of him. He used to fall down when he was drunk. You know, I never did that. You know, I just fell asleep, you know, but this guy told me the best thing I could do in Alcoholics Anonymous was separate from people, places, and things and get to know myself. And get to know others and stay in Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, because this will afford you an opportunity beyond your wildest dreams. Like now, your first day in a meeting and somebody's telling you AA is going to afford you an opportunity beyond your wildest dreams. I just said, okay, maybe he's still drinking, you know, but he was already in the rooms, I think like 26 years at that point. So looking back, I don't remember a whole lot about him because my dad had died like 25 years earlier. And so, and I think about that. Then I wonder, whatever happened to him? But you know, the selfish part of my program is that I ask God each day to allow me to be a maximum service to him and others. And what I do with that is I go out here and I be the best individual that I could be a day at a time. You know, like, I believe in order to stay sober a day at a time, I have to be a full functioning human being with the willingness to be willing to help others and carry the message and do what it takes for the next suffering alcoholic to get to Alcoholics Anonymous. So I think the selfish part of my program is that prayer first thing in the morning. And I'm willing to accept whatever cards I get dealt throughout the day. And some days I don't like the cards. I really don't, you know. But, you know, in spite of what happens, I get through the day. I don't take a drink. And at night I thank my higher power for allowing me another experience I had never known before, you know, and some experiences are really unique, especially when you get new people in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, sometimes I wonder if I'm sick or they're sick. But, you know, that's the joy of this program, you know, like I get to walk a many a rows and many a days, and I've never been ungrateful for it. Because, like, before I came here, I was totally stuck in self. And I come from a family of five sisters and one other brother. And at the age of 13, I lost that family. I lost them physically to alcohol because I started drinking then. And it was all about me. It was never about them. I was never in their childhood growing up. They relocated the day I graduated. And I graduated and I figured like I had done everything in life I needed to do. And so when they moved to Florida, I stayed in Philadelphia. Because I just couldn't see me making any geographical changes then. And, like, I had my friends. I had the guys I hung around in barrels and drank wine with, the guys I raced cars with and drank wine with, and the women I chased up and down the streets, you know, like, why would I leave all that? That was all fun. Not to follow my siblings, you know, because my mom taught all of us a lot of good morals, but at the age of 13, I asked her one Sunday, I said, do I have to, like, continue to go listen to this guy preach from the church? And she said, it's up to you. And I said, not going. And she said, well, if you're not going, we'll see you later. And from that day on, I separated from my family, basically. And I think the higher power that I didn't understand at that point in time, you know. And drinking became a major part of my life, because while they were sitting there listening and singing hymns, I was having a lot of fun out in Georgia at Fairmount Park drinking Boone's Farm Wine and falling off a bicycle, you know. Like, it don't get much better than that, you know. Like, and I thought, you know, like, I had the best friends in the world, you know. Like, and little by little, you know, things happen when you start drinking, and you start finding that they're really not that real friends, because most of them never show up with money, you know. And like, it finds out that I had a lot of frenemies in when I drank. I never really had friends. You know, I searched the world for friends, you know, through bars, hit houses, everything, you know, looking for people to understand me, and I didn't understand myself, because I was an active alcoholic by the time I was 17 years old. And the only really good things that happened to me that I was able to slow down a little bit, because I had this other half of my life, which was my fiance at the time, and she was like, we lived two different lives. She lived around the corner, I lived on this corner. Her family was involved in all kinds of things, like the Masonics and all that, and I was involved at the horse stable with the guys that drank around the barrel. So, like, we had totally two different lifestyles, but she meant a little more to me, and this is the only time I can ever remember coming out of myself, is that she meant more to me than my family meant to me. So I would kind of slow down drinking, and, like, she was probably the cornerstone of my life from 17 to now, almost, you know, till I left her over at the Marriott today. But that was my only controlled drinking between 17 and 21 until we got married, because her dad was a police officer, so I didn't really want to look like an idiot most nights. And he didn't really think much of me, because I raced cars and I was always dirty with grease, you know. And she said, can't you do something better than that, you know. And like, the bottom line, it didn't really matter, because that was my only controlling factor that kept me out of self and thinking of another person. And I thank God for that today, because, like, I probably wouldn't be here if I didn't have those little nudges along the way, you know. And I believe by the time I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, the biggest thing that happened to me that I was willing to surrender, because the nights were endless. You know, I suffered from bewilderment, terror, frustration, and fear, all locked up inside myself, thinking somebody was chasing me, thinking I was going to die every night, you know. And this is all stuff that I put in to make me feel like that, you know. Like, that's a pretty sick thing when you think about it, you know. And, like, I haven't felt like that since May 18th of 1986, you know. I am no longer locked within myself. I have really good sponsors. I've been sponsored by a home group. My first introduction to sponsors were like five people. It was like a circus. It was five guys and one lady, you know, and like, they picked me up the first year. They took me to every meeting. They wouldn't allow me to drive. Any family functions, they went with me. You know, it's like, my wife says, what's wrong with them? You know, like, why do they got to go to our grandmother's 100th birthday? I said, they want to make sure I don't drink, you know. So, they were really about giving it away, you know, and they did not stay within themselves, you know, and, they gave me a foundation that I was able to walk away with and be like totally comfortable with Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'll be forever grateful for that. And that's what I learned the 7 years that I was in Philadelphia. And like, as most alcoholics do, when we come to Alcoholics Anonymous, we get better from the inside out. And that's where I think that selfishness fell off. And I started to become a part of the human race, as we call normal people. I started doing what normal people did. I got up, I thanked God, I kissed my wife, I went off to work, and I came home, and I became all kinds of crazy things, like a scoutmaster walking around with shorts and little tassels on my socks. You know, yeah. I'd walk into an AA meeting, they say, this guy really flipped his lid, you know what I mean? But, you know, disowned me. They treated me just like the first day I walked in there, so I don't know a whole lot about selfishness because I was taught in order to be here, you need to keep giving it away. And the topic was like strange. Like I said, well, it's going to rain all day. Most people won't be here if it's going to rain like it rained this morning. So I went online, and probably the first time I ever went online looking at the grapevine for articles, and like I wound up going to sleep. You know, that topic just took me straight to sleep. But I realized that like I am not a selfish person. This is not a selfish program. Can you imagine if it was? I don't think there'd be 65,000 people here this weekend. We'd all have something else to do. But because of what we do together, we can all do this over and over again, a day at a time. And somebody somewhere, like he said, they keep it personal and simple. Somebody gets another chance, just like me, to walk in Alcoholics Anonymous and stand up and walk free, you know. That is the greatest gift I've been able to get free of me, you know, like we talk about the bondage of self, you know, like I am not stuck there. And if I am stuck there, I know how I got there. It's because I put myself there. I no longer blame people, places, and things when I get stuck. I look at how I got stuck there. For every action, there's a reaction. And usually Dave starts the actions, and I don't like the reactions. And so what I do, when I get stuck like that, I have a few phone calls and a few people that I call. And usually they got more problems going on than me, and I forget about why I called them. See, I think that's how Alcoholics Anonymous works. Is a really unique thing. You're in pure pain, and you call the next guy, and he's in more pain than you. You forgot what you wanted to talk about. So, like, it's this miracle that keeps happening, and we keep getting tossed in other people's lives. And so when it comes down to being selfish, no, I'm not selfish. You know, like, if you ask my wife, she might say I am because I have a lot of toys. You know, but I think I earn those toys. But it does not take away, because every toy I have, it includes from my grandson to my kids. And like, I believe in sharing everything I have today. And everything I share is like, I take my grandson, like, I'm a car fanatic. I have a 6-year-old grandson, can tell you exactly how I built that car. And I would have missed that dream if I hadn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous. And that kid today, like, we called him, he said, where you guys at? I said, I'm in Atlanta. He said, why? And my wife hasn't disclosed to him about Alcoholics Anonymous. She said, she don't think he needs to know. I said, well, every time we call, he's going to ask why. She just tell him we'll be home tomorrow. She's got some smart words. Tell him we'll be home tomorrow. And he's okay with that. It's like people ask you why you don't drink. I just don't. I don't make excuses anymore. I just show up and I do the next right thing, you know. So as far as I know, I don't know anything about selfishness. But I do know in order to stay here, I have to become one among many, like the 12th tradition says. We're no greater, we're no less. You know, our leaders are but trusted servants, you know. And I think that's where I learned a lot about being unselfish. When you sit in area committee meetings and you got the greatest thoughts in the world, and you realize they're not that great. Because everybody else in there had that same thought. I said, maybe I'll surrender mine so we can get done today. You know what I mean? Like, I believe in cease fighting everything and everybody, and sanity will return. And that's what happens to a guy like me. I'm willing to listen as a dying can. Thanks.
Thank you, Dave. That was great. I got this timer here, and I forget all about it, but it's not for me. We got a lot of time left. I hope Margie really talks a lot. The last in-between, I talked a little bit about how I can help make this program personal to me. One thing I did was I changed step 11. Is that okay with y'all? I don't know why I said y'all. I should have said use guys. Step 11, it talks about, it says... asking only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. I add the power and the willingness. That's how I personalize that. Because if I'm going to ask for direction and I get it, and I don't like it, and I'm not willing to follow it, why am I asking? I don't think that's very profound. I've heard that from the podium before. But in that Appendix 2, it talks about honesty, willingness, and open-mindedness. And so I need to have the willingness, and if I don't, you know, this, if I'm going to rate myself and I'm going to ask enough people until one of them gives the answer I'm looking for, I know where I go. I go where I want me to go. And a lot of you aren't going to like that. A lot of you aren't going to like that. Anyway, that's enough for me right now, and I'd like to introduce Margie.
My name is Margie, and I'm an alcoholic. And, yeah, it says on the thing that I am from London, so I mean, I'm sorry about the no Kate Middleton accent, but there again, we got to manage our expectations, don't we? My name is Margie, and I'm an alcoholic, and my sobriety date is November 6, 1979. Seriously, I don't know how I got here. It's really interesting. It's interesting to me that I've stayed sober. I don't get it. You know, it's like, how did that happen? Thing, especially since I only got sober when I was 4, you know, kind of thing. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'll put that on my ninth step. And here tonight, I mean, this is just amazing to me. It's just amazing, that I'm here, that people here. But here, you know, there are people here that I got sober in the Coral Gables group of Miami, Florida. Yes. I have people here. There's 4 people here who I got sober with around. We were all the youngest people in the group because we were all 4 years old. We're the youngest people in the group. And we hung out together and we got sober and we're all still sober after all this time. And that's amazing. And I have friends of friends that were sober. And I also have my home group now is the Pont Street 6 o'clock beginners meeting in London, England. And there's 2 people here from that group too. So I don't know. It's like amazing. We're all here. So to me, this is just like, you know, it's like home group here. I did come in young, and I came in young, and I realized I was lucky. I was very lucky to realize that something was horribly wrong at the bunk. I did all, you know, everybody's got a story, and everybody's got the things, and there was the defining moment when you go, you know, I have to stumble into AA, or somebody shoves you in, or somehow you get here by some miracle from here. And I knew at that point, I wasn't drinking because I was emotionally upset. I wasn't drinking because this. I was drinking because I was an alcoholic. Because that was my first and foremost response that I had to everything. And once I got past a certain point of drinking, I had no choice in whether I was going to drink. I never knew with any kind of certainty whether I was going to stop at 2 drinks or I was going to end up in Boca Raton. You know, I had no clue of what was going to happen. It was completely, you know, random from here. And I also had this feeling. I mean, a lot of people say I thought I was going to die and I came into AA. And, you know, to me, I don't know. Alcoholics, they kind of know that they're going to die, you know, if they keep drinking the way they were. It's kind of like up for it. I had the feeling, and it was this kind of almost like cold breath on the back of my neck, that somehow there was actually some human potential here, that I could, there could be a chance at some kind of a meaningful life, and I was blowing it. And I was afraid that little, and I think that's what gets us all here, is that tiny bit of human potential, that little tiny light in the dark saying, just maybe something can change. That's what got me into the program, because that was scarier to me. Losing that cold feeling in your soul, that was more frightening to me than actually, you know, smashing into another car or anything else, or killing myself, or being such a brat that somebody killed me, you know, kind of thing. I was more afraid of that. That feeling, that cold loss of human potential, was really what got me into the program and kept me in the program. Because when I came into the Coral Room, God bless the Coral Room, I'll tell you, it was 1979, everybody was kung fu fighting, you know, everybody was doing disco duck and all that stuff, and that really was my downfall. I used to go out and drink. Well, I started out, I used to go out and drink and dance and maybe find some boys. They were boys then, now they're all senior citizens, but they were boys at the time, and somehow it went from, you know, dancing and boys and drinking to the whole, it changed. We went out to drink, period, from here. And this is when I became, it took a hold of me. I was always an alcoholic. You know, I remember everybody has that euphoric first drink, and I had one of those. But that's when it really took a hold, and then I had no choice. I always used to go by the clock. If it was midnight, I was either drinking, driving drunk, someplace in with somebody named Sweetheart, because I didn't know who they were. It was the 70s, you know. Driving home drunk, passing out, or drinking on the way home with they didn't have cup holders then. You had to hold it between your legs, and you spilled all over the place. Got home, parked the car, maybe, possibly. Conk out, wake up in the morning with a horrendous hangover, like I had a terminal illness, go through the day, a feeling like that, like I had a terminal illness, and swearing to God Almighty that I would not drink again until about 3 o'clock, when I started getting, you know, a little bit of food, a little bit of sugar, a little bit of Alka-Seltzer in there, and you start thinking, and then at 3 o'clock I started thinking, well, I'm feeling better now. I think I could go out for one drink. Yeah, I could. And then I would think about the drinking, drive to the drinking, and then we're back at 12 o'clock. And so I would say, I don't drink until after 6 o'clock at night, but my entire existence was dictated by the alcoholism that lives in me. I conceptualize my alcoholism. It lives in the same space that I do. It occupies the same space that I do. There's me, who is a sober individual who likes to go after human potential, that likes to, you know, hopefully not be totally selfish in the program and give that back out and give that thing back to another alcoholic. And then there's the other one. It has a completely different agenda. And I can listen to either side on any day. Victoria Station now is my thing. This is an unselfish good day. Look at that. We're in London. Isn't it fabulous? Look at that. Don't look that good, but look at those, all these wonderful people visiting our city, and isn't it nice? And yes, first, yes, of course you can go. And if I'm having a bad day and I'm listening to the alcoholism, I'm going, am I invisible? You know, do you have to bash into me? Who dressed you this morning? Get out of my way! You know, that's the alcoholism day. And the other one is the good day. So on either day, I can go either way. And the more I listen to that, it's still there. It approaches me differently, of course, because I'm a long time sober. So I can't just go, oh, screw it, you know, let's just have a drink. It's got to, you know, do a Mad Men ad campaign PowerPoint kind of a thing. You know, like, no, look. See, you don't need to go to all these meetings after all these years. I mean, you know everything over here. So it approaches me there. It leaves that thought with me and, you know, builds up the thing. And then I have the bad Victoria Stations day, you know, add that to the mix. And it builds a case for me. My alcoholism is after me. That's the selfish part of my program. That's what dictates. When I'm drinking, that thing, that part of myself dictates everything that I do. And all of it is in the self-interest of the alcoholism and maintaining that and going through to that and going that up. And that I recognize there. And now it is still there, looking, plotting, scanning every day like a police scanner. What's going on with her today? Ooh, job stuff. Ooh. You know. Scan, scan. relationships, family, you know, and how do we get her? No, they listen. It listens, and it listens to what I'm going, and what gets to me, and what doesn't get to me, and how to get to me, and installs the buttons, and does all that. And my job as an alcoholic, because what we are to each other, is we are the voice of reason. We are the voice of reason when somebody, like what Dave was saying, you call somebody and you go, their problems are more than mine, and we give that back. And that, to me, is the genius of Alcoholics Anonymous. First of all, self-help group is an oxymoron. And if we were all really selfish, what we would do, we'd go on Amazon and we would buy Alcoholics Anonymous, open it up, read it, and go, boom, I got it, and never be in contact with another person again. But somehow, the higher power has put this little flaw in our thinking, and it's after 3 days you start to lose all conceptual things that are ever in the book from here, which means, and this is the selfish part, that you have to come back to a meeting to go, oh, yeah, that's right, don't drink, go to a meeting. Help another alcoholic. No. Okay, I got it now. Here we go. You know. And it still goes on 3 days, and it's like, you know, who are you? You know, I'm getting the bad Victoria Station day. And I find that fascinating because it is, to me, divinely inspired from here. And it's put in there because we come back to, you can't just read the book and be sober. Of me. There has to be an interaction. And yes, we come in because we're selfish and we need to, you know, maybe make our lives better. But as a result of that, first we're told to help another alcoholic, and then we are inspired to help another alcoholic. Because if you think about it, I always think about it, how many millions of people, just currently, now there's between 2 and 3 million recovering alcoholics, but in the course of history, since the first Cro-Magnon man stepped on an apple and it went kind of nutty and he ate it and went, oh, baby, you know, this is where I'm going. And, you know, there's been an alcoholics from here. How much time, how much love, how much business, how many families, how much have we lost? And I was thinking this the other day. It's like, so what if everybody in this whole place today were drunk? You know, talk about an attack on the city. Yankees in Atlanta. Oh, you know. Whoa, you know. But we get what we come back to is we get this from here, and then we move it out of ourselves and our families, the businesses, the world is so much better for what we bring out from it. Because I mean, if you read the Lasker Award, which I always have read out when they ask you for a reading at the meeting, I always read it, and it said this will change the myriad of ills that are among the world, not just alcoholism, how we do it. Because, I mean, seriously, so after all these millennium out from here, and, you know, in a self-contained way, there's an alcoholic and somebody, you know, we try to get police to help, nurses, doctors, wives, husbands, children, priests, psychiatric nurses, you know, all these people, psychiatrists, cannot get an alcoholic to stop drinking ever. They're like, thank you very much, and then they're off to the bar or whatever. And that's one thing I liked about AA is, like, it never told you not to drink. In fact, it tells you to drink. You want to drink? Go ahead. Be worth the case of the jitters just to make sure. But as we are in the program, and this is what's fascinating to me, all those professionals, all those people with good intentions who can't quite get why you don't, it's like you have a good family, you have a job, you have this, but why are you drinking? So somehow, Bill and Bob excavated, and I do believe it was excavated, it was sent before and they discovered it, and this was what was going to help humanity in general. So we're going to take all these crazy, maniacal, suicidal and homicidal alcoholics, and we'll put them into a room together, unsupervised. That'll do it. You know. What the hell is that? I still don't know how it works. You know how it works? I don't know how it works. But yet we have the book card that says how it works. It's like, you know, and, but it is that you can see an alcoholic needs help and it's given to. My pals from the Coral Room, when we first got sober, we're all young ones in the family. There was a bunch of old guys who were my age now, but a bunch of old guys. And, you know, they didn't quite know what to do with us. They were kind of like, and we're like, well, steps and things and stuff. What's, you know, you don't know what the 12 steps are when you come in. You just don't. And it took me 20 years to realize that the steps are written in the past tense. They are written as an interview. You know, it's sort of like, it doesn't say, you know, admit we are an alcoholic. It doesn't say that things. It says, what did you do? Well, we admitted we're an alcoholic and our lives have become unmanageable. Really? Then what'd you do? Then we, you know, and it's just one person telling another, saying what they did, not for what you do. And that, again, that is completely unselfish. It doesn't tell you what to do. It tells you what another person did. It's all in the past tense. And I didn't realize that for many, many years. I also didn't realize that all the punctuation on things are square, which is kind of interesting. So, these old guys would sit in the Coral Room smoking cigarettes down to here, and we go, what's 12 steps and service? And I get the empty ashtrays and that kind of thing, and they just go,
don't drink, go to meeting.
Yeah. But I got, and the things and the stuff and the thing and the boo, and you know, and they,
don't drink, go to meeting.
Yeah. And you know what? There's great profundity in that, because now that's all we really need to know is to not drink and go to a meeting. Because when you don't drink, and you have to, and if you're new in here, and God bless you, really, new in, wouldn't that be a meeting to go to last night, your first meeting? They want to get a newcomer next time. Bring them to the first meeting from an international convention. That's the way to go. But as you know, as I forgot, I lost myself there. I lost myself. Anyways, let's I'm gonna have to. I went off on trains of thought there. One of the things that I go, yes, the profundity of that. When you don't drink. Obviously, you don't get drunk. So in the first year or so, it was just really mechanics. You know, we hung out, we got sober, we didn't drink, went to meetings, got the whole lexicon, got all the lingo down and all that stuff and what you're supposed to do and, you know, easy does it, yeah, first things first, yeah, and all that stuff. But if you don't drink, it affords you the platform to be able to absorb this program and what it has to offer. And it doesn't come all at once. It's a very gradual. And what they talk about is an awakening. And you start to wake up and you go, yeah, that's true. Read the big book after a year or so and see how much it's been rewritten since the last time you read it. And go to a meeting. Meeting is where, you know, you can go think, well, you're also going to get a sponsor and this and that and the other thing and all the other things that you have to do as a participating member of AA. But what you do is you don't drink and you go to a meeting. And a meeting is where you get that unconditional love, where you get this is what we do, that you get a sponsor, you clean up, you do the things and other things. And if that little genius thing of 3-day thing of forgetting why we come to meetings and all that stuff and being, you know, going into yourself and getting selfish in your things and that kind of thing. If we didn't have that, we wouldn't be able to come back to and extract and bring back out into the world. There's one thing that alcoholics are not, and that is not, they're not selfish. Once you are, you feel that you feel it. It's not just about alcoholics. It's about humanity. It's about humanity. We never take a pledge to never drink again. What we do, hand on heart, is that when another, I'm responsible, that when anyone anywhere reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA always to be there for that. I am responsible. And that's a pledge. We say that. And that's to me, is what makes it an unselfish program. And that's not something that is out there in the world, but that's something that we bring out there into the world, that we bring to our families, that we bring to that. And it does come from a selfish kind of root in the beginning, but it moves and it blossoms into human potential. I mean, how many people, so they're sober a year and a half, what do? You go back to school, always. You know, you go back to school, you get a new job, you got other things, you become the king of the world, you know, you do all these things. You know, I mean, what we do is amazing. What we bring to the world is amazing. And that to me, so the question being, is this selfish? Hell yes. In the beginning, absolutely. Selfish. That's the selfish modus brings us in. It's not what keeps us here. Being selfish, again, you cannot stay sober with that. You cannot help another alcoholic. And I take that pledge very seriously, that the hand of AA always be there. And it's not just for alcoholics, because it doesn't just say just for alcoholics. It does say anyone, anywhere, from here. And that's, you know, somebody needs a door open, open the damn door, you know, kind of thing. It's not hard. Just do it, you know, everybody. I am eternally grateful. The longer I'm sober, the more I'm grateful. The more every day I get up, I was just saying to Raphael over here earlier, that I wake up in the morning now, and it's not like, okay, here we go, another day. It's sort of like, oh, another day, you know, oh, you know, no, I get to do this again. And that is a gift, and that gift was given to me by, don't drink and go to meeting, guys, you know. With the thing, don't drink. You don't drink, you don't get drunk. If you go to a meeting, you will hear everything you need to be. Again, they talk about our human potential to be who you're going to be, and then bring that. You have a responsibility to bring that to others. And to me, that is altruism in its finest form, in its finest form. And we are the people who bring that in their finest form. And, you know, I may be prejudiced about that, but too bad. You know, I believe that. I see that. I see that in my own family. I see that with my sponsees. I see that with everyone that's here. Again, they love Alcoholics Anonymous conventions in there. And they're like, they're the most well-behaved people ever. And it's like, wow, would you like to see a videotape of before? You know? No, you don't. No, oh, you know. And that is the beauty of it. We do have this resurrection of ourselves, of our humanity. We do have this resurrection as human beings that work out here in the world. And for that, I am eternally grateful. Thank you.
I'd like to thank all our speakers once again.